We're back.
Yeah.
Like we never left.
We were gone for a week.
No, we weren't.
Yeah. Wait, let's get all this over. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can check us out on Facebook. We are BigPlanetComics.com. And BigPlanetComics.com. And our Twitter is at BigPlanetComics.
BigPlanetComics.
Yeah. BigPlanetComics. My name's Kevin.
I'm Nick.
My name's Jared.
That's us.
Yo.
That's the three of us.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, we're back. I wanted to play the Welcome Back Cotter music at the beginning of this, but then we got a letter from John Travolta's lawyer. I was like, how did he even know?
Yeah, that's why he's paid a lot.
John Travolta's lawyer is Michael, actually. That's what the movie Michael is based on.
He's an angel.
He is. He's an angel. John Travolta's an angel. He's a sweetheart.
He is.
Yeah, and he's like an alien, right? Because he's a Scientologist.
I'd like him to fly me to heaven one day.
Yeah, he should fly you to heaven.
He will.
Yeah.
If you pay him enough.
So what's been going on, you guys? I know Jared did something crazy last weekend.
I had my birthday party.
Oh, you did have your birthday party.
You mean 2 weekends ago?
2 weekends ago.
I did.
What'd you do?
I went to New York to hang out.
To hang out in a park?
A park downtown where the bankers hang out.
Did you join a drum circle?
I did not. There were drums, though.
Jared's beating around the bush, but he occupied Wall Street.
I stood on Wall Street and tried to occupy it. It was rather ineffective. There were no parades or marches or anything that day.
Yeah, tell people what was going on. That did not affect you.
Yeah, that was the day where they said, you know, you should take all your money out of the big evil corporate banks and take it into the small local banks that, you know, care about businesses and local community and stuff, or go to a credit union or something, both of which I've already done. So apparently I'm part of Occupy Wall Street without knowing it.
That's yeah. Always a good soundtrack for Occupy Wall Street. I have been occupying Skyrim.
Nice.
it's a very beautiful place.
How's that going?
It's going pretty well. I'm only about 5 hours in, but as probably some people out there know, Skyrim is wonderful.
it's a beautiful place.
It's more like Skyrim is occupying your heart.
Yeah, Skyrim is a fantasy video game, kind of like Fallout 3, but with dragons and stuff.
I think most people listen to this know what Skyrim is.
I think most people know what Skyrim
is. They're probably playing it instead of actually listening.
It's probably true. Right now,
doing both.
I consider Skyrim to be my real life and this to be my fake video game life.
Wow, this is a lame game.
Damn, yeah, Nords.
Yeah. Yeah, like it snowed here and I got really mad, but it snowed in Skyrim and I was like, ooh, it's beautiful.
There may be a snow dragon nearby.
There might be a snow dragon. I'm going to get his bones.
Get his bones.
If you get dragon bones, other dragons will come and attack you.
Oh, I can see that.
I think. I haven't actually
I bet they
fought
would.
A dragon yet.
They got a lot of racial pride.
So, Nick, what have you been up to?
Not much.
No?
Not you know, just playing pinball.
Playing pinball.
Nice.
Because you won a pinball machine.
Hell yeah, I won a pinball machine. Matahari, baby.
How'd you do that?
There's a random raffle.
Yeah, it's a
raffle.
Wow. Nick and I are part of the FSPA, the Free States Pinball Association.
It's true.
When they have like a local league around here.
In case we weren't,
the Free States.
Like yeah. In DMZ.
Yeah.
You guys are going to be on the side of the rebels.
It's true. Yeah. We're usually when we go and play pinball, we crash a helicopter into where they play pinball and then we're trapped in it. It's got really political.
Yeah. In case we were nerdy enough, we're in a pinball league.
Yeah. In case the ladies weren't already knocking on our doors. Yeah.
I'll call it hipsterish.
It's awesome. Yeah.
It's
and
true.
We're so I was in the raffle and I won a pinball machine. They call me and they're like, hey, when are you going to come pick up this pinball machine? I was like, what?
That's awesome.
And yeah, we had to carry it into my basement, but it was all worth it.
It was all worth it. Yeah.
To add to the basement of pinball machines.
Yeah. Yeah. Two broken ones, but now one that works.
Sweet. Yeah.
I was freaking out. I was like, oh, I'm going to move this pinball machine. And then I got it downstairs and I was like,
your wife's like, shut the hell up down there.
It's true. Yeah, that's definitely what's been going on.
Totally worth it.
Yeah. So, yeah, sorry, but we missed out last week.
Yeah,
but
we wanted to recharge, so this would be twice as awesome as normal.
And we've been rearranging the store in Vienna.
Yes, bruisingly and exhaustingly so. It has been almost perfectly rearranged.
But now we've got everything by genre.
Yep.
Almost everything.
But we're going to try it out. We're going to see how it works. So we've got like a horror section, a crime section, a fantasy section, a sci-fi section. We have a whole samurai section.
That might be my favorite.
So like specific.
Mini comics, comic strips. Yeah.
Small press.
art and instructional
nonfiction, all yeah. kinds of good stuff.
We're taking it to the streets.
Taking it to the streets.
Yeah. So next time you guys come in and say, "What's a good horror comic?" We'll just be like, "Look there."
Yeah. Now we can be lazy. Yes. We're like, it's in this general area. Yeah. The good horror comic you're looking for is here
somewhere, hidden in this it's this massive comic.
So what else happened while we were gone? Heavy D died.
Oh man,
it's pretty heavy.
Mickey Rooney.
Mickey Rooney. Wow, that was the totally wrong sound effect.
Kevin's the worst.
And it was Andy Rooney.
Oh, it was Andy Rooney.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I just told you that like 60 minutes ago.
Wow.
And another, Joe Frazier died. That one's actually sad. That I mean, sad. Heavy D dying is sad too. And I guess Andy, well, I'm not sad about Andy Rooney.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
He was old.
Yeah, and he was a jerk.
Yeah. He's a curmudgeon.
Did anything else exciting happen?
I don't know. What have you been up to, Kevin?
Well, I just been playing Skyrim.
That's
basically
all you need to know.
I also bought Super Mario 3D Land. I'm gonna start playing that pretty soon. And
nice.
Oh, I had my first band practice.
Oh, right. Yeah. New band.
Gladiator Cop.
Oh, nice. Finally. I've heard about them for a long time.
We rocked out. I was soundproofing my basement today.
Awesome.
Yeah, I felt like I was in a hustle and flow.
It was just like hustle and flow. Well, it's hard out here for a pimp.
It is.
All right. I think that's basically it. We've been up to a lot. It's been a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How have you guys been, listeners?
Yeah.
You should let us know.
Yeah. We'll ask them and then we'll just be silent for a second so that they can answer out loud. How have you guys been, listeners?
Oh,
wow. Nice. That's really cool.
Oh, thanks for sharing.
Sweet, sweet.
I don't care at all.
Do you not care? That's not very
I mean,
nice.
No, I care. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
You know what our listeners really want, though.
What's that?
Some reviews.
We love comics. They're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
So the last couple of weeks haven't been jam-packed with new books.
There have been a lot of good ongoing books, but very few new startups.
Yeah, there's always good ongoing books when Uncanny X-Force comes out.
That's true. That's true.
That came out last week.
It did, yeah. So that definitely happened. But combining last week and this week together, I think we got a pretty good slate of stuff here to talk about.
Let's talk about it.
Should we just get right into this?
Yes.
Let's talk about Avenging Spider-Man.
What about it?
Well, it's written by Zeb Wells, and it's got art by Joe Matter.
whoa. Who?
Joe Matter.
Famous for his art on Uncanny X-Men.
Yeah, and wait, what? Yeah, that's true. Yep. Wait, Battle Chasers?
Battle Chasers.
So Joe Matter is very famous for being
slow. Playing video games?
He's very slow.
And playing video games.
He designed Darksiders.
No, just playing video games.
Oh, just playing video games.
Isn't that
games?
Why he quit Battle Chasers? He said, "I just want to play video games."
Is that true?
I believe it is.
Well, I know when he quit Battle Chasers, it was to design a video game that actually never ended up coming out.
Nice.
Fair enough.
And then he did design work on Darksiders, which is kind of like a Zelda-y game.
To be fair, like for drawing like whatever 8 or 9 issues of Battle Chasers, he probably got paid more just to draw like one character for this video game.
That's true. People who do comics don't get paid anything.
That's true.
So when they announced Avenging Spider-Man as an ongoing series with art by Joe Matter, everybody was surprised.
Yeah.
I wasn't surprised. I just didn't expect to ever see more than one issue.
Yeah. Well, that's all we've seen so far. Yeah. So I guess. But I thought the first issue was pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. There was definitely some Spider-Man avenging things. No, I mean, this basically is, it's like they have Amazing Spider-Man, which is basically Spider-Man's main title where all the big kind of stuff happens. And this is basically like a Marvel team up type issue.
Yeah. They said that issue is going to be like have a new guest in everyone or every few issues will be another team up.
Yeah.
Character.
This is basically Marvel team up with Spider-Man. So like every storyline will be Spider-Man teaming up with another character.
Well, who's in this first one?
The Red Hulk.
And Wolverine.
Really? Wolverine's kind of in it.
Yeah, Red Hulk's mostly in it.
Yeah. Well, all the Avengers in it for like a couple minutes, but.
Does he team up with a Moloid army?
He doesn't team up with a Moloid army.
He doesn't.
He teams up against a Moloid army. Yeah, so it's a pretty basic story.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like Mole Man's attacking New York.
Like he does.
Or sort of.
Like he did in 1961.
Sort of attacking New York.
Yeah. Well, explain that.
Well, you think he's attacking New York, but he's not.
Well, spoiler.
Spoiler.
But yeah, no, it's like a fun action Spider-Man comic. Yeah. I was actually surprised. I didn't think I was gonna like it very much.
Me neither.
I know a lot of people really like Joe Madureira's art. I'm not a big huge fan. I didn't like Ultimates 3, but that might have been for the writing more than anything.
Also the coloring in that was really terrible.
Yeah, it was like those sort of computer finishes, which this has as well, but I think it's done a lot better in this.
Yeah, definitely.
This is a lot brighter and like more fun.
Yeah, it's just more fun. And his art in this, it really reminds me of Humberto Ramos's art in Spider-Man recently,
right?
Yeah. Which is a good thing.
Yeah, they kind of came around the same time and had kind of a similar like background and yeah, I mean, it's pretty good.
Yeah. So this issue is not like earth shattering or anything, but it is fun. It's a fun comic.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, like the scene of like the Molad army swarming across the Brooklyn Bridge or whatever is awesome.
Yeah. And it looks like it probably took him about a month to draw. So I will see what happens in the second issue of this.
Yeah.
And, you know, J. Jonah Jameson has some funny lines. He calls the people, it's like they're about to run a marathon. He calls them, run hippies or something.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
That.
Something like that. Yeah. No, J. Jonah Jameson's characterization is pretty good in this. I will say at the end, some Moloids. Well, should I say that? Should I say what happens at the end?
There's a twist.
No, whatever. It came out last week.
Yeah, yeah. People have had plenty of time. No, but the characters at the end look very much like they were drawn by Joe Manganiello.
Yeah, yeah.
They have like tribal tattoos and like giant shoulder pads and stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh, there's an interesting business thing about this issue as well.
That's true. Yeah, that is interesting.
So this issue, well.
I say before you actually say what it was, but go ahead.
All right, now the anticipation is built up enough. All of these come in a sealed plastic bag, not because they're trying to make you buy two of them or some stupid gimmicky thing inside of it. The thing that comes inside of it is there is a unique code to digitally download a copy of the comic book for the exact same price. So it's not like charging more like they did with Justice League or any of those things. You just get a free digital copy.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I think that's hopefully where a lot of these things are going to be going. Yeah. Keeps us mildly relevant in 10 years or 5 years or whatever. But no, it's nice. Yeah, same price. You get the copy. I thought the Justice League model of paying an extra dollar for the digital copy is ridiculous. Yeah. It's like you just put a code in the book and people can download it.
Yeah.
And it's cool. I mean, you can file it away and then read it on your iPad if you want to.
Yeah.
I think it's smart.
Yeah.
Now, we heard there was a comic store
yes.
that was actually refusing to sell Avenging Spider-Man #1 because of this digital download code.
Oh, really?
Which to me is like the opposite of what you would want to do. Because that's like saying, hey, there's this comic that you can only get on your iPad
because you certainly can't. But we will not provide for you, so you have to get it on
iPad. Exactly. It's like if you're a customer here, you can't get this comic unless you go on the internet.
Ridiculous.
And then people are like, what? I can get comics on my iPad? Yeah. Yeah, right. But no, yeah. So that's kind of a little aside. But you guys liked Avenging Spider-Man, right? I thought it was pretty good.
Not great, but really fun.
Yeah, fun.
Yeah, no, it was fun. All right, moving on to a book that is fun. I don't know.
I liked it. One.
Okay, well, we'll let you talk about it. This is Battle Scars #1 by Chris Yost and Scott Eaton. Good old Scott Eaton.
Well, I guess this is one of those kind of Fear Itself Fallout books.
Yeah, basically the end of Fear Itself #7. They had kind of previews of some stuff that was coming up, and this was one of them.
Originally, this was actually, from what I read, it was supposed to be part of the Fearless, but then they were like, there's too much going on. So they split it off into its own miniseries. And it's basically about this soldier who was fighting a war overseas while all the Fear Itself stuff was going on. And he comes back home and there's a bunch of people trying to kill him. It involves Taskmaster, and then Captain America's trying to save him. And there's a lot of mystery. And from what Marvel has said, he's supposed to be somebody really important to the future of the Marvel Universe. So you know, that's kind of what everybody's trying to kill him for. They're like, you're this guy and we're going to kill you. And like, he's like, what? Who am I? What are you talking about? And then like, you know, it's a cool little mystery building up.
Yeah, I feel like as a reader, even in this first issue, you don't quite know what's going on, which hurts it a little bit.
But there's a good introduction to the guy, and like you get to know him, and like it's completely focused on him. And like you get to know like who he is and what his motivations are. And then you see all this crazy stuff start happening to him, and you kind of sympathize. And it's a cool little mystery.
Yeah, as a first issue, it didn't really blow me away.
Yeah,
but
this feels like an issue that the first two issues will be great, but they should have pressed that all down into the first issue to really hook you on it. So
yeah, and I feel like as it goes along, it's going to get better. I'm definitely intrigued. I'm going to read.
Yeah.
I'm going to read the rest of it. I'm almost always more interested in the post Marvel crossover stuff that happens.
Right.
Yeah.
Like that issue of Avengers that came out a couple weeks ago was like incredible.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So and Fearless has been really good too so far.
I've still only read the first issue, but I need to get on that. The Fearless train.
I read the first three. It's good.
Ooh, yeah. Ooh. Yeah. So it's Battle Scars. I mean, if you're into the Marvel stuff and you want to kind of get a little side story, and it's got Taskmaster in it.
Yeah.
Taskmaster's awesome.
Or if you like Scars.
If you like battles
and scars
or shattered heroes,
or if you like shattered heroes,
I just really like scars.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah,
you're grossing me out over there, buddy.
sorry.
So Marvel, I mean, I was obviously saying this is important, like they say about every series, because they're trying to sell it. So I don't know how much you could believe it, but this feels like it will be important. And we will check out #2 for you and let you know if it gets awesome.
Right. They are a publisher. So it's like it's like when Jared came back from the DC New 52 thing and he was like,
I was
brainwashed. No, man. Trust me. They said that all the artists and writers are doing the best work of their careers.
I think that's true, though.
Do you?
Well, some of them.
Scott Lobdell's not terrible.
Rob Liefeld is definitely doing the best work of his career.
It potentially.
Yeah.
It's hard to gauge.
The idea that Jim Lee is doing the best work of his career on Justice League right now is kind of silly to me. But
it's not.
It's good. Anyway, that's Justice League. And Justice League 3 came out this week, by the way.
Yeah.
And it was good. Check it out. All right, so moving on to a book. I don't know about this book.
Should we even talk about it?
I think we should talk about it.
We should talk about it. This is De Profundis. This is by James Jarvis. This is a book from Picture Box, which is a little company run by Dan Nadel, who used to work at Big Planet and Bethesda, I think, right?
Yep.
Picture Box notoriously puts out
the artiest of art comics.
Yeah, and the weirdest of. I mean, they put out all that, like, is his name Ben Jones?
Yep.
And they put out, like, Brian Chippendale and stuff, all those Fort Thunder guys.
Performing?
No, Forming was put out by No Brow Press, which is like an amazing publisher from England that put out like Forming and like all those Jack Teagle books, Fight and stuff like that. They do great stuff. But I don't know. I couldn't really get into this book. I know Jared has something to say about this, so I'll let him do it. Well, can you kind of describe the story a little bit?
Yeah, basically, for the most part, it's a silent comic. There's the implication. There's definitely a story going on. There's the implication of conversation, but there's no actual words in it. It's basically a young kid of some sort to
like a writer,
possibly. I'd say more like a graffiti artist
or young artist,
an artist who wants to do some art on a wall and is caught by an older guy who's like, no, you should redirect your art. This is me interpreting with no dialogue. You should redirect your talent towards actually drawing something, and he provides him with a place to do his art. And then the rest of it is him kind of dreaming or being pushed by his artistic demons or going crazy or having hallucinations.
That guy, according to the back of the book, was a priestly being who commissions him to decorate a temple to nameless gods.
Yeah, I had a different interpretation when I was flipping through it. I was like, this guy is asked by like God to draw something, and then the demons from hell like start commandeering his art, and then
if that's what
he's torn between heaven and hell, and then
it'd be a lot cooler.
Yeah. Well, that's what it seemed like to me.
See, you guys didn't really like it. I mean,
no.
I didn't say I didn't like it.
Oh, okay. Well,
Jared did
not like this. Although Jared does not like silent comics in general.
Nope.
How did you feel about the art in this, though?
That is really why I dislike this.
It's, I mean, James Jarvis'
very loose.
Art style is very loose, and but it's
can
not...
Can I go with childish, or is that too rough?
No, I think childish is fair. I mean, I think he's very influenced by stuff like the Muppets and like Richard Scarry, and I think the childlike nature of the art is on purpose.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think at times, like a lot of the Picture Box stuff, it can be off-putting a little bit.
Yeah.
And I love some of the stuff Picture Box puts out. I love Power Masters. I just ordered like the Odd Future book that they put out.
What?
I know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, wow. Yeah, they're putting out an Odd Future book. Nice. I just got my email confirmation today that they sent it to me.
Excellent.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's like, this book's not perfect.
No, that's true.
But it's definitely interesting.
That's true. It's interesting. It's definitely not the kind of book that is targeted towards me.
Yeah.
I am not the audience for this thing.
And it's like, if you have $20 to spend on a comic, I don't know if you want to spend it on, and even if you're interested in our comics, I don't know if you want to spend it on this one that's going to take you, like, you know, 5 minutes to read. Yeah. And then I feel like there's not quite enough going on in the art that you're going to get drawn back into it.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, because I love stuff like this, and it's just not, it's not the best thing I've seen. It's not even the best thing I've seen from James Jarvis. So
yeah.
Anyway,
next.
Now I'm sad.
All right, let's move on to something else.
Yeah, let's move on to something. Oh,
oh no, let's do it.
Now
do
I'm it. Really sad.
Let's do it.
This is House of Night number one.
Yep.
This is based on a book by PC Cast and Kristen Cast. Script by Kent Dahlien and art by Joel Jones and Carl Kerschel. I will say right off the bat, the art is definitely the best thing about
very
this
good.
Book. But I do want to point out that this comic takes place between scenes from Betrayed, the second novel in the House of Night series.
Yeah, I have no idea what that means.
Which is why I had no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
Okay, so obviously this is not targeted at us. It's targeted at House of Night fans. The thing I do like about it is it's not you're getting an adaptation of a book. You're getting a new story set in the universe, which is, I think, would be really good for a lot of comics that tend to do like more adaptations or just...
Yeah, I can't really get behind anything that spells vampires with a Y.
I can definitely see that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty common, though.
Yeah, it's
clearly you've avoided a lot of the more terrible vampire fiction.
I will say, I mean, just coming to it with no knowledge of the series, I really couldn't get into this.
It was terrible.
I had a lot of trouble following the story because I feel like there's this sense that you're supposed to already know who these characters are.
Yes.
And to take it to like a sort of larger level of how I felt about this is that it certainly didn't make me want to read the House of Night novels.
That's true.
So
yeah, I understood it enough to get the plot, and like it's kind of interesting because apparently it's for having never heard of this book before. It's, you know, teenagers at like a magic school or something. Yeah. They all become vampire. Whatever it is.
I mean, if you want to, so. if you read the House of Night books and you want, you have a dollar, I can just get this.
Oh, yeah, I will say. Yeah, it is a dollar.
That's the best thing about it, you know? It's only a dollar, so you don't feel too cheated when you read it.
No. The best thing about it is that I don't have to ever read it again.
Yeah, let's get it. Let's go.
Moving on.
Next.
Yeah, next.
Can we talk about something awesome?
Yeah. Well, kind of.
Oh, what is it? What you got?
This is Magneto, not a hero. This is part of, or is it Magneto?
How's hero spelled?
Just regular.
It's not G-Y-R-O?
No, it's not like your
hero.
Your comic that doesn't exist anymore, I guess.
No, it exists, sort of.
Yeah, when did the last one come out? Nick does a comic called Real American Year. I think we talked about it on here before, yeah, but now he just does something else. I don't know what he does. but anyway, this is by... this is written by Scotty Young, which I thought was strange.
That is interesting.
A great artist.
He is a great artist. He does all the art for like the Oz stuff that's been coming out.
The New Mutants back in the day.
Yeah. And he has a really loose art style, but he didn't draw this.
No.
But the art in this is by Clay Mann, who I'm actually kind of a fan of. He did art. Go ahead.
Yeah, he drew a lot of the Age of X stuff came out a few months ago.
Yeah, and he drew a lot of the Heroes for Hire series that came out. Two heroes before this one.
Yeah, that was good too.
But that had all that stuff where like the bug guy was like in love with the brood queen, which I thought all that stuff was great. And I like his art. Although he does seem to be doing a little bit of an Olivier Coypiel impersonation
like
in this
that's
book.
That's a bad thing?
No, because he pulls it off, which is great.
Especially when he draws Magneto. He's very
and cat.
He's got the chin.
And this book is all about Magneto.
It's all about Magneto. And it's also about not Magneto.
Well, we're not sure.
I don't know how much
I think we're pretty sure.
Can we just spoil this? I mean,
yeah, go ahead. Just tell people what it's about.
I mean, if you really care, just to stop listening, but for a second. But anyway,
no, this is why you should care about this book.
Magneto, basically, somebody dressed like Magneto, who everybody thinks is Magneto, kills a bunch of people, and Magneto is called into question, and the Avengers interrogate him, and they're like, "What'd you do? Like, we have evidence it was you, and we have your DNA on file, and it was you." And he's like, "No, it was my clone, Joseph, or whatever."
Yeah,
which is like a storyline from the X-Men, like back in one of those crazy, like convoluted X-Men stories, where originally it was actually Magneto, and they were like, "Oh, Magneto's back, and he's like lost his memory or whatever." But then, like, eventually they were like, "Oh, it's just his clone."
Nice. Problem solved.
And he supposedly died a few years ago, and I guess he's back. And
yeah,
he's kind of really evil.
It's kind of like a murder mystery until you find that out at the end.
Yeah. It's weird because in the original comics with Joseph, he was like a good guy. He was he was like Magneto, but like a super hippie version of Magneto. Like, let's take care of the Earth. And like now he's like evil somehow. I don't know. I mean, like, that's part of the mystery.
And this marginally fits in with the X-Men Regenesis stuff. It's branded Regenesis. The only thing that makes it Regenesis is that
it's got X-Men in it.
Yeah, like Cyclops is backing up Magneto because Magneto's on the new Uncanny X-Men team.
Yeah,
right.
But I thought it was good.
I thought it was really interesting.
I don't know if this is the first thing that Scotty Young has written, but it's certainly the first thing I think I've read from Scotty Young.
He mostly wrote like a bunch of like backups and like short stories and stuff. This is his first, I think, full issue of like a Marvel comic.
Yeah, so, and this is a four-issue miniseries?
Four.
Yeah. So, no, I'll definitely read the next
issue.
Yeah,
I thought the characterization was good. I mean, it's basically a character piece with twists. So yeah, it was good.
Magneto was great in this. Like every line he said was just perfect. Sounded exactly like something Magneto would say. Like he wasn't backing down, you know, when Iron Man and Captain America were like
in his face.
Have you done this? Like he's like, no. Just chill, bro.
Although I don't think Magneto has the right to be that kind of like indignant. I mean, it's not like he hasn't like murdered people.
No, but he's like the arrogant guy who would just not care.
Yeah, he's a little like Namor.
He's still like he's like above them.
Yeah.
He's like, shut up. Look.
Yeah.
He's like, I didn't do this.
I can pull all your fillings out right now.
Yeah. Well, he does kind of something.
Does something awesome. Yeah.
No, but it was cool. I thought it was fun. Marvel continues to surprise me with these little miniseries they do.
Yeah.
We were just talking earlier before the podcast about the Red Skull miniseries and how good that's been.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about it when it first came out, but it's always nice to know that these things
continue
stay
to be
good.
Yeah.
So hopefully this does the same thing. Hopefully it stays good. So far, so good, though.
On to the next one.
On to the next one. This is Operation Broken Wings, 1936, number 1 of 3. This how's that for a mouthful? this is by Herrick Hanna, and the art's by Trevor Hairsine, who's been drawing Animal Man, right?
He draws stuff. No.
No, that's Travel Foreman.
He's drawn stuff.
Yeah, he's drawn things.
He drew some of the Wisdom miniseries.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Various other things.
Yeah, various other things. But this is kind of a World War II,
pre-World War II
comic.
More like when the when the German intelligence, who's, you know, been kind of up to their all typical skullduggery before the war starts.
Skullduggery.
And it's basically a military espionage thriller where an agent for the German military intelligence gets caught up in something. And it's basically whether he is pulling a double game on his superiors, or he's not the person he appears to be, or he's running some other long game. So, yeah, it's a lot of like intrigue and twist and plots of running back and forth across Europe, and it was pretty good.
There are a couple of really good scenes. There's a great sort of very tense scene where people are kind of sitting around drinking tea, but right. you all know that they all want to kill each other.
Yeah, yeah.
It kind of reminded me of some of the stuff from like Inglourious Basterds.
Definitely. Yeah.
I actually really liked this. I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
The only small, and this is a small problem, is it doesn't feel like a full issue of a comic, because I think it's an adaptation of it's a European album basically.
Yeah, like a single story that got split up unnaturally.
So like when Seven Psychopaths was coming out, which is kind of was in the same vein, it's like it just very abruptly.
Yeah, it's not written to like end at the point that it ends at. It's just kind of like, all right, now I'm going to go do this thing to be continued.
Yeah.
And, you know.
But I think you see a lot of comics that are sort of from this time period, and a lot of them aren't great, but I thought this one was pretty good.
Yeah, that was really fun.
The art's fine, and I don't know. It's just, a lot of little intrigue. And
yeah, definitely.
Every time there was some kind of like crazy action about to happen, I was in my head, I was like, take these broken wings, learn to fly again. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Speaking of crazy action.
Crazy action.
Crazy. Marvel Point One.
What's the point?
What's the point of one?
It's one. All right. So let me just.
Point one, number one.
I have my little sheet that I use every week that's like, here's what we're going to talk about. Here's who drew what and all this stuff. I just wrote Marvel Point One by everybody.
Everybody good.
So basically, this has seven stories in it. It's got this.
Framework.
It's got this framework story by Ed Brubaker with amazing art by Javier Pulido.
Should we just talk about each one individually? Awesome.
So basically the main story is it's like these guys that are trying to steal memories and from the Watcher. And as they're breaking into his mind, they're kind of seeing things that are going to happen in the future. And I want to say the art in that section.
So good.
Javier Pulido is basically the second artist that switches back between Marcos Martin on Daredevil. He did some Spider-Man stuff too. And he does like this Ditko-y, Kirby-ish cosmic stuff.
Yeah.
That'll just blow your mind.
Blow your mind.
But so that story's great. And it really works as a framework to show all these other kind of future Marvel stories. And that's kind of the main point of this, is they want to show, you know, some new series that are launching in the next year or so.
But that was also interesting that there, who are these mysterious people who are doing this to one of the most powerful people in the Marvel universe? So it's like an interesting framework, not just an excuse to tell these stories.
Right, definitely. And I hope that aspect of, because I know all these other things are going to become comics in the future, but I hope that aspect of it actually makes it into something as well.
Because, I'm assuming so.
Yeah, because I thought that was really interesting. And the fact that Ed Brubaker wrote it, it's so like out of his wheelhouse.
That's true.
To me, it's like Ed Brubaker does like the crime stuff great and like the political stuff.
But, like thriller stuff.
Yeah, but not like cosmic Watcher comics. So I thought that was very cool. But so... it's broken down into a bunch of stories. The first one is about
Nova.
Kid Nova?
It's a new Nova. I'm not sure if it's Rich Rider or not, but
so that section was written by Jeff Loeb, and then working with Ed McGuinness as he has in the past with Dexter Vines, who
they're actually, I guess, doing this Nova series, like those two, because they're doing that Extinction thing, the Avengers Extinction, whatever it's called, or whatever. What, Extinction, is that what it's called?
Oh, yeah. Something.
They're doing that. And then I think after that, they're doing this Nova series.
And I thought the art in that part, this part, was really good. I mean, I tend to like McGuinness's stuff from time to time anyway. I like cartoony stuff like that. But I don't know.
More rounded than his stuff usually.
Yeah.
Less cartoony or something.
Or more cartoony. I don't know. Something.
Something.
But and the writing was good in this section, which is crazy because it's written by Jeff Loeb.
Yeah. Right.
Who is usually got awful. But I guess one of the main things in this are over the past few years he has been.
Yeah.
But should we talk about the big thing in this story?
Yeah. I mean, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, it's basically about the Phoenix Force returning.
Yeah.
Which is, you know,
can be interesting. And Nova trying to warn Earth.
Yeah. So, and then it moves into another. Which one's next after that? There's so much going on in this issue. I don't know how long we should actually talk about.
How many pages is this thing?
Let's just skim over this.
I think it's like 64, 70 pages. Something
like
that.
Like, admittedly, the cost on this is $6, but you're getting. That's another thing that's important about this is, I hate to sell this to you, but a lot of people have not seemed interested in this, and this is very important in that you are getting a free preview, not free preview, but, you know, a look at all the new stuff Marvel's going to be pulling.
And I should and these are not things that are going to be in those issues. These right. are all these are all original stories.
Yeah, this is not a sample pack of new stuff coming out with like an 8 right. page junkie story. These are 8 short, you know, page stories that are really cool about what's about to happen.
So there's a lot in here. So we should just go through real quick. After that, there's an Age of Apocalypse story that's going to spin out of what's happening in Uncanny X-Force, and there's going to be a new series called Age of Apocalypse. And that's by David Lapham, who, of course, wrote Stray Bullets and Young Liars and is incredible. Yeah. And it has serviceable art by Roberto Del Torre.
I thought it was pretty good. Yeah, he drew Daredevil for a little while, and it was pretty good.
It's decent. It's not amazing, but the story's very cool. Yeah. And then there's a Scarlet Spider story, which sounds terrible
to
everybody.
Due to popular demand.
Yeah.
It's surprising how many people love Scarlet Spider.
Is that true, really?
Yeah. Oh. No. Like, they've been demanding, like, the return of the Scarlet Spider.
People love... He's do back. People love the Clone Saga?
People apparently people do. I mean, they reprinted all of it.
They did. And now they're reprinting Ben Reilly Adventures.
Yeah. And this all spins out of Spider Island. So if you read Spider Island, this is kind of like the next part
crazy
of
Spider
But
event.
This is written by Chris Yost and art by Ryan Stegman, who's a guy that is kind of under the radar, but I love his stuff. He drew the She-Hulk's miniseries.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
That was very unpopular.
And
I think, did he draw some Hercules stuff, maybe? I might be getting mixed up with Riley Brown, but that was fun. I thought the kind of stinker out of the bunch, I thought, was the Cold Moon and Dragonfire story.
I kind of like that one. I'm not sure.
Of course you
did. I thought
it
was interesting.
It's like a Marvel comic. You loved it. Yeah. But that was by Fred Van Lente, who, of course, has written a bazillion things. Yeah. But he wrote Herc. He co-writes a lot of stuff with Greg
Action
Pak.
Philosophers.
Yeah, Action Philosophers and comic book comics.
Yeah.
With art by Salvador LaRocca, who was, you know, who's doing his thing.
Yeah. Yep. I feel like... This is the one story where I was like, where is this going to fit in anywhere? Right. Like,
but I imagine they might end up popping up in like Avengers Academy or something like that.
Maybe Avengers, like regular Avengers. I don't know. I feel like there'll be like new characters that are introduced somewhere in Avengers. Like, it's kind of weird. Yeah.
So I thought the framing story was the best thing in this, but also this next thing was amazing. This was a Doctor Strange story. That's kind of it's by the team that's going to be doing the new Defenders book, Matt Fraction and Terry Dodson. And it's just this very cool story about like, Doctor Strange kind of investigating the mind of this like crazy dude who lives in Greenwich Village and getting like trapped inside of his brain.
Craziness.
It's like such an old school Doctor Strange, just awesome. Very cool. With great art. Terry Dodson's fantastic. Yeah. So, and then there's like this crazy Avengers story at the end.
You know, the Ultron one?
Yeah, the Age of Ultron. This is by Brian Bendis and Brian Hitch. And it's like, I guess, kind of like an Age of Apocalypse.
It's like Ultron's ruling the world. It basically ties into the first Avengers storyline that, like, of the current series, where they were like, they went into the future and they had the kids from like Avengers Next or whatever.
Oh yeah.
And like Ultron rules the world, and then
But it was pretty nutty, and it was that kind of Brian Hitch widescreen action stuff. Yeah. But overall, I mean, this was like a crazy good book.
Yeah, I thought it was fun.
Yeah. I mean, like, I didn't love that one story, but that was
all the rest were really
and I thought that story was good. I just out of everything, I thought it was the worst.
Yeah.
But it's definitely worth checking out. And if you're interested in the Marvel universe and where it's going,
you kind of have to get that.
Buy it. I feel like to point one name,
it kind of threw people off.
Yeah, it's it hasn't been the most successful thing. It works in a sense because they can double ship their books and people still buy them. And most of the stories have been pretty good, but I just feel like...
But as a concept of like, here's a tryout issue or an in-between storyline, a standalone issue you can try out a new series with has not been a huge
They should have just called it like Marvel 2012 or something like that. Or just, you know, or like Marvel, you have to buy this. This should have been Fear Itself 7.1, 2, and 3 or something.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But anyway, that being said, it was fantastic. It's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, it's cool.
And just open it up and look at the first page. And then if you don't want to buy it, don't ever talk
then
to
look
me
at the sixth page.
All right, so moving on to the Simon and Kirby Library of Crime. This is by Simon and Kirby.
I've never heard of Simon and Kirby.
And it's a library of crime.
This is the Joe Simon and Jack Kirby Library, which is a series they're starting to run. They've done one or two.
They did the Fighting American one and another one.
Romance or something?
Yeah.
But basically, this is all their crime stuff. So back in, late
40s mostly, yeah.
I mean, Joe Simon and Jack Kirby worked on a million books together. And this, which I had no idea they did this many together, but this is pre-code. So before the Comics Code Authority, after all the Senate hearings and stuff, tried to like tone down comic books. So for the most part, this is all like...
There's a lot of murder.
A lot of true crime, but not necessarily a lot of inspired by true crime. But yeah, really violent, really crazy murder.
Some children getting killed.
I'd say very similar in tone to the Crime Does Not Pay anthology that came out just recently, in that it's like these almost true crime things, but that are kind of goofy at the same time, but are also like really messed up.
Yeah, like dramatized insanity. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of the ones I've read in there. There's like the firebug, you know, a guy who's like forced to commit arson and ends up burning a building down with like people alive in it, and just like how he's tortured by it. And then, of course, he ends up getting burned to death too. And it's like, crime does not pay.
Right. That's what it always is. It's like, it's like people do terrible things and then terrible things happen to them. It's all those kind of cautionary tales that.
But not, it's how, not as many. It's like there's another one where it's like the guy who invented the bulletproof vest, which I thought was interesting because it's a Western tale.
Old Dirty Bastard?
No. He perfected the bulletproof vest.
He perfected it. Yeah.
But that one's more interesting because it's just this guy who's kind of undefeatable at that point. It was just became a hired assassin and was going around just murdering people in the Old West for all these evil, like, you know, cattle barons and stuff. It's definitely
like the kind of stuff you could get away with in comics in 1947 and you couldn't get away with in like 1955 or 1956. But yeah, no, it's like another one of these things that's just like a little part of comics history, but at the same time it's like very readable sometimes. This
highly entertaining
stuff, can be a little rough, but
some of it were just like, wow, this is cool that it's out, but why would I buy this?
And these guys have been working together for 8-10 years at this point, and so they had honed their craft.
They're well versed.
All right, so moving on, well, I should say that's recommended for sure. Moving on to, I just wanted to mention this is the Spy versus Spy by Perhias Omnibus. Antonio Perhias was the guy that drew Spy versus Spy from the beginning. He created it, and he drew it up through 1998 when he died. And this is like a collection of like lot of the stuff. I don't think it's everything. I didn't actually check, but I don't think they could fit everything.
It might be
there.
He would do like one page an issue.
One or two pages.
Also,
so
I guess that'd be 50. No,
this Spy versus Spy started later. This might be everything.
So 12 pages a year. It could be all of it.
Just say omnibus.
It's pretty thick. Yeah,
means all encompassing.
Omnibus never lies. Well,
does that mean a transforming public transportation?
Yeah, it's not omnibus volume one, so. That's just all of it.
I think I'm thinking of Unicron.
you usually are.
It's not volume one. So either way, this is a very comprehensive collection of this stuff either way. And Perhias' stuff was great.
He's so creative.
And it really stands the test of time. And
if you're going to buy one Spy versus Spy book, this is probably the one.
Yeah, no, definitely. I will say that they just released another Spy versus Spy collection that just came out this
Peter
week,
Cooper
right?
Stuff, yeah.
And that's Peter Cooper did that. And that he's like an amazing underground cartoonist that they got to do Spy versus Spy. And he really kept the legacy going.
Yes, sir.
I'm getting tearing up. I love Spy versus Spy so much over here. All right, so moving on. Two, Zombies That Ate the World, Volume 1. This is by Jerry Frisson, written by Jerry Frisson, who writes the Lucha Libre comics and Taquitis, which is basically also Lucha Libre.
Yep.
And this has art by Guy Davis, who most people would probably know from BPRD.
Nowhere.
Or
he's
the
not famous.
The Marquee, which no one has read, but you shall read.
Yeah, The Marquee is definitely cool. This is a very different kind of take on zombies.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I mean, like most of the zombies are just kind of like, they're not like going around eating everybody. They're just kind of like, hey, this guy is still alive even after he died. And they're like,
yep.
I wish he would go away. And like, one of the main characters in this is like a zombie wrangler or whatever. He goes around and he's like,
what do you mean whatever?
I mean,
well, there was that other comic about zombie
the
wranglers zombies, that came out a few years
zombies,
ago.
Zombies don't like really attack people or whatever. They're just kind of like
annoying.
Undead. Yeah. They're just undead. They're just there. And like they're really boring and they don't have like higher brain functions, so they're just kind of like and so like, you know, this guy's like gets called from like you know, like some guy's like, oh, my dad died like 3 years ago. We're getting really tired of him. He just sits around moaning all day and like, take care of him. And there's also like this crazy luchador that likes to fight zombies. And it's a bunch of like kind of short little things. Most of the characters it's mostly the same cast of characters continuous throughout. But it's like just a bunch of kind of crazy short stories in this world that they've created with the zombies just kind of being there.
Yeah, and it's set in the future, so you definitely get like some weird technological advancement in just how society slightly changed. But yeah.
I think is one of the coolest things about it is like he kind of creates this world. Like they have these like crazy futuristic drag races and stuff. Yeah. And yeah, no, it's cool. Guy Davis's art is...
It's very funny. Like especially for a zombie really comic. Funny, yeah. This is more of a comedy. It's really good.
Yeah, and it's definitely not... You know, there was the whole trend of like a bazillion zombie comics coming out, and this doesn't really fit into that. It's not it's not just like a George Romero clone thing. It's definitely its own thing.
No, it starts off like zombies have been around for a while, and they're just kind of like there and kind of annoying, but just really just nothing. They're just there.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. So that's a very cool book. And this is only the first half, so there'll be a second book that finishes up the story. But they're kind of all short stories. You can buy it on its own and read it. All right, so moving on to Captain Swing and the Electrical Pirates of Cindery Island. This is written by Warren Ellis and illustrated by Raulo Caceres.
Sounds about right.
Sounds pretty good.
Close enough. Sure. Close enough.
This took forever to come out.
Yeah.
It's a 4-issue miniseries put out by Avatar, and I want to say it took a year or more to come out.
Yeah, the trade came out fast.
The trade came out, yeah, like 2 weeks after the last issue. But this is basically a story about Springheel Jack. And
well, it's like this guy's like basically Springheel Jack. It's like loosely based on that, but he's, you know, this cop gets caught up in this conspiracy where like his fellow cop gets killed, and then this crazy pirate shows up with a flying airship, and it's powered by different things, and he's trying to build a utopian society. And
so it's a historical book.
Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, like, yeah, it's just like this cop like meets this guy, and this guy hates cops, and he's like all about making a amazing super technological future that's wonderful for everybody, and he hates, you know, and the cop gets caught up in it, and there's a fight with like other like people that are trying to stop him from making this perfect society that want to keep things the way they are and stuff.
Yeah, it's very much like the idea of Springheel Jack is like this mythological figure, you know, the way that he was portrayed in the media at the time. You know, people thought that he could jump over houses and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so they kind of take like that Nikola Tesla like era technology and do like a kind of steampunky thing where he's using electricity to like fly through the air and using the same thing to like power airships and stuff like that.
And the cool thing in this is like every few pages, there's like a cool explanation for some kind of technological device or whatever. It's like pages from his journal, but mixed also with what's happening and stuff. It's pretty neat.
Yeah. And it's a very gory, murdery thing.
Warren Ellis-y thing.
But it also kind of has like a high flying action feel to it as well.
Yeah. Actually, brisk.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a pretty quick read as well. But I think of all Warren Ellis's things that he's done recently, this one felt like very complete to me.
Yeah.
Like he knows how to start something, but he's not always great at finishing things.
Yeah,
and this has a nice beginning, middle, and end. I thought it was good.
Yeah, it was good, definitely.
Yeah, the art's very Avatar-y. It gets very violent.
Yeah,
a lot of exploding heads and things like that. But
Well, speaking of finishing, he finally put out the last volume of Freak Angels, which I didn't realize was going to tie up with book 6, but it did, and I thought that had a good ending.
Yeah, so. Yeah, and no, he definitely finished that up well.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's a good ending. So yeah,
cool. Moving on to another pretty gross book.
Uh-oh.
But very good. This is Cradle Grave.
Oh, this is so good.
This is by John Smith and Edmund Bagwell. This is a very British
comic. Quite. Yeah, this apparently ran as like 5 or 6 or 10 or however many issues of the 2000 AD serial that comes out in Britain. And this is a collection of the whole storyline. And it is perhaps one of the best things I've read in a long time. It's got this guy's art is amazing. Has he done anything else that you guys have heard of?
No.
He's just one of those great British guys you've never seen stuff.
Yeah,
on.
No, I'm assuming this ran in 2000 AD.
It did. It said that it actually ran some issues of it. But yeah, this guy's astounding. But it's basically Cradle Grave is implying the cradle to the grave system of, you know, how you're supposed to be taken care of in, you know, a good, you know, socialist society, which is utterly what not happens in this book.
It's also the name of the town that they all live in.
Yeah.
Of the characters.
But it's like this poor guy comes out. He's been in jail for like 8 months or something for basically burning down houses. Yep. And it's the like worst neighborhood with the lowest class of people. It's just like, you know, have no future, no hope, and everything's kind of downtrodden and the place is falling apart.
They're chavs.
It's like Skins mixed with like a creepy like horror story.
I don't know if most people know what Skins is, but
yeah.
A British TV show that was adapted poorly and failed.
Or what chavs are.
I don't know what a chav is. What's
it's like
a chav.
Chavs are like
British street kids, basically.
Yeah, like trashy kind of ghetto kids in England who are really like mostly like white trashy girls who have like cornrows and stuff like that. But
well, that's what these people are.
Yeah, it's like Attack the Block.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All they do is drink and do drugs and party all the time.
And then they start doing really gross things.
Yeah. It's basically this guy's back out of juvie or whatever for being in there 8 months and is trying to get back on the right path and do stuff and instantly is drawn back in with his chav friends from back before. And things go terribly, terribly wrong.
And they get involved in like a weird, like really creepy horror
thing. Yeah, this hard quickly shifts into a horror comic.
Yeah, I don't know if we even want to talk too much about the horror thing that happens in this because it's so such a, like when it happens, it's like they build up so much. And it's like this whole area, like It's like the garbage men have been on strike for like weeks, and like it's so like he talks about how the whole neighborhood like stinks, and like,
the art feels like it just feels like, I don't know, claustrophobic. Just like there's a constant building tension. You know things are gonna go badly, and then they do.
Yeah, it gets really gross. I mean, like, I don't even know.
But even the hard stuff too. Yeah, even the hard stuff is kind of like kind of secondary to the main story of the guy like trying to get his life on track, and everything starts going wrong, and like it's mostly about him and his friends and his like what they get into, but it's mixed with this like really creepy horror thing that
I think that's the thing that makes the comic really
it's like
work,
the impetus
and
of it
makes
it
very like it's not like a by the numbers story. It's like
you never know what's gonna happen.
It's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, I mean, a standalone graphic novel, this is one of the best things I've read in a long time.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It is good stuff. Although I didn't like it quite as much as I like this next book, which is Tezuka's Princess Knight, Volume 1.
I said standalone. This is book one.
I just wanted to mention this quickly. It's just because it's weird and I love it.
It's amazing.
This is basically Tezuka's a book he did in the 50s that's about a princess that's born, that's meant to be a prince, that has this cherub that watches over her. And she's kind of pretending she's a prince so this evil guy doesn't take over this empire. And it's got a very like Disney feel to it, but with all the weirdness of Tezuka thrown on top of that. And I just want to mention, if you like his stuff,
Talk about it some more. It's amazing.
It is amazing. Well, go ahead. Yeah,
I mean, it's, you know, it's the traditional like, yeah, the Disney thing of like mistaken identity. But in this case, she has to, even though she's a princess, she has to pretend to be the prince. So it's the constant thing of the duty of like trying to run the kingdom well. But then she starts to fall for this neighboring prince who, you know, she has to dress in drag all the time. So the prince thinks he's like, this princess is his good friend, even though she has a crush on him. So it's like all these levels of romance and drama against all these shenanigans. And, you know, the crazy Tezuka, like, you know, oh, we have to find out who this prince really is. Oh, it's I can't even explain it because there's so many like convoluted stuff about it.
That's why I was just like,
but,
like,
so good.
And Tezuka's art is Tezuka's art. I mean, like, it's amazing. The way he draws characters and stuff, they're all so...
Yeah,
it's like, very like...
They're also different looking.
Yeah, but...
You see manga now, and it's like... You know, it's like a bunch of people and they just have different kinds of pointy hair. Right. But like Tezuka's stuff, it's like people have these like huge noses and like, I don't know. It's just
perfect, like kind of cartoony stuff. Like,
yeah.
It's like exactly like Disney stuff.
Yeah.
And I think the back of the book said this was kind of the thing that kicked off the comics for girls movement, the shoujo movement. This was one of the first things that was really popular and kind of made that whole genre up. So Tezuka did it again.
Yeah. He's the Japanese Walt Disney.
He is. Something like that,
yeah. All right, so moving on to Gladstone's School for World Conquerors, Volume 1. This is by Mark Andrew Smith and Armin Villebert. I think we talked about this comic before, but
it's amazing.
Let's talk about it a little bit more.
All right, so Gladstone's.
Amazing. We'll start with that.
I talked about a little bit, I think in the last podcast. Well, it's been so long.
I think it was one of your quick picks.
Yeah. But Gladstone's basically just about a group of kids who's in a school for supervillains. They're all kind of, their parents are all supervillains, and they're like getting trained to be the future supervillains of America. But, or I guess they're all international, but anyway. the kind of secret behind this is that the actual heroes and supervillains have had a truce for years, and they just do their fights kind of for show or whatever.
And the kids merchandising.
And the kids don't know this. And so the kids are like, we're going to kill all these heroes and like be the baddest supervillains, take over the world. And that's basically the start of it. And then it's the best way to kind of get people to read this is like, it's kind of a little bit like Invincible in that it's like, it's a little more funny than Invincible. It's like these kids are like, oh, we're going to do these cool things. And it's kind of cute because they're little kids or whatever. But there's also some really serious stuff that starts happening here and there. And like, it's mixed with all this kind of drama about the parents. Like some of the parents don't want to have a truce and like,
it's like cool. The goofy school, like, cause definitely younger than Invincible. It's like, you know, middle school maybe.
Yeah. I think so.
So it's kind of like the young kind of innocence of middle school, even though they're all trying to be super tough, super villains against this backdrop of like this kind of fake lie that they're all growing up into. But that the Skull Brothers, is that them?
I don't know if that's what they're called, but yeah.
They're my favorites. They're completely awesome. But you find out one of the twists is that, like Nick said, that their mother is in the supervillain prison because she refused to go along with this secret truce and, in fact, is trying to, you know, get, you know, her kids to grow up and become real supervillains and break her out and do all this stuff.
Yeah, it seems like most of the supervillains who are in prison are there because they don't want there to be a truce.
They're bad guys. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's kind of, it's interesting. There are these like different factions. So there's but then there's also like a lot of romance stuff that goes on, and like
there's a lot of soap opera
storylines, but done in a good way.
Yeah.
And I think probably the main source of drama is the fact that these kids don't really know that about this truce. So something pretty crazy happens because of that.
Yeah.
And no, it's just a really good comic.
It's super fun.
It's one of my favorite like Image series right now. It's good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah, I'd missed a few issues of it, so when I sat down and reread this whole first book, I'm like in love with it again. It's so good.
Yeah, you read like the first one, you're like, oh, this is good. You read the second one, this is great, and then after like third, fourth, fifth, you're like, oh my god.
Yeah, definitely the back third of this book, like issues 5 and 6, are really amazing.
Yeah.
Cool. So yeah, that's Gladstone School. We talked about it before, but it's good stuff.
It's awesome stuff.
Yeah. So moving on to Godzilla Legends number 1. This is by Jeff Prezenkowski and Matt Frank. This is the third Godzilla series coming out. Well, I guess
one just finished.
Yeah, Goliaths and Gangsters just finished.
Gangsters and Goliaths.
Gangsters and Goliaths.
Whatever it's called.
But this one seems to be a little more straightforward.
Yeah.
It's like
simpler, definitely.
Yeah. It's a weird kind of story.
It takes place like in, I don't know where it takes place, but like in like movies or whatever. But anyway, it's like Destroyer is attacking. Is it Tokyo?
I'm pretty sure it's Tokyo.
It's almost always Tokyo.
And then like this guy's like, oh, I've developed a way to summon Godzilla or whatever. And he's like, all right, here, I'm going to do it. And then, you know, it goes wrong and stuff starts happening.
Yeah. Destroy is fighting Anguirus. And then Godzilla shows up and they fight. It's basically just like giant monsters fighting each other.
Yeah. Yep.
With like kind of a little weird story just about like this technology that they've developed or whatever. But this probably isn't the best of the Godzilla books.
I think it's the worst. The least good.
Yeah. I still had fun with it though. Yeah. I'm definitely gonna keep reading it. I don't know. It's Godzilla.
This one felt like if you want to try a Godzilla comic, if you love Godzilla, you'll enjoy this. But it was too insular in some ways. Like for one, they say kaiju the whole time, and if you don't know much about Godzilla, you might just be like, what the heck are they talking about? In fact, do they even say Godzilla? They always say like Kaiju Alpha.
Yeah,
or something.
He's the Alpha Kaiju.
They call him Godzilla at one point.
But it's the Gangsters and Goliaths just came out in trade paperback. So if you want to read a Godzilla comic, that one was so smart and fun.
And actually, the current like ongoing one has actually been really good. I've been keeping up with it, and it's really fun.
Well, Eric Powell's been writing it, right?
Yeah.
And the other one was written by Jonathan Lehman, who writes Chew.
Yeah.
And this one is written by Jeff Prezenkowski, who writes Godzilla Legends. So
yeah, I don't know what else he wrote.
Just basically it's the third best Godzilla comic coming out right now. So whatever that means. All right, moving on to Hawken number 1. This is
Hawken what?
Just Hawken.
Hawken Dove?
Not Hawken Dove, just Hawken number 1.
Hawken?
Hawken.
Okay.
Hawken for people keeping track at home. So this is by Tim Truman does the art in this, and then it's he's done a bunch of stuff. He did like Scout and some other
things.
John Sable Freelance,
Jonah Hex back in the day,
Grimjack.
Yep,
bunch of stuff.
And this is written by his son Benjamin Truman. I call him Benji because we're buddies.
Benji. Cool.
But this is just like a weird story about like
it's a pretty much straight up Western.
But with like a kind of ghost story thing mixed in with it.
I missed that.
Was there a ghost story thing?
Well, it was weird because I didn't get that. But then it said in the description of the series that he had been killed, and he was like, now basically he had done a bunch of bad things in his life, and now he needs to like fix all of them. It's very much like the comic Near Death that came out.
But he is haunted.
He's haunted.
This comic stunk.
It was not right. It was not good.
It was. Yeah, I think Nick and I were talking about earlier. It's like everything you've ever seen in a Western before,
just
with nothing new.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's like super violent.
Yeah,
it is.
And the writing's very childish. And it's
maybe Benjamin Truman's like 12.
Maybe he is. It's like a sort of axe cop situation.
Yeah, he's like, I love westerns, Dad. Let me do it.
Yeah. So yeah, it's not very good.
No, the art's good. Truman still got it, but again, nothing particularly special about it.
I highly recommend you don't buy this.
Benjamin Truman is definitely the second best Truman that's coming out right now.
It's true.
Anyway, so yeah, that's all we need to really say about Hawken.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it's not really worth your time. All right, moving on to Mudman number 1 by Paul Grist.
Yeah, Paul Grist,
the Grist.
The Gristest.
Yeah. So Paul Grist, he did Kane, he did Jack Staff.
He is a notoriously independent, weird little British creator who does those comics.
And he drew Saint Swithin's Day, right?
He did.
Which is a great comic that I think Grant Morrison, right?
Yep.
He wrote. But this is a new book by him.
Yeah, it's the problem with it, I feel, is like, for having read some of his Jack Staff stuff, which is this awesome superhero stuff that really plays on, like, Jack Staff is basically the British Captain America, so he's wearing, like, the Union Jack on his uniform, and it deals with a lot of, like, British ideas and World War II stuff, and it's got all that kind of superhero tradition to work with. This is just, like, Invincible. It's a young kid who's becomes a superhero. Or yeah. has superpowers. And
a muddy superhero.
Yeah, yeah, literally. That's his power.
He's kind of like Clayface, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was pretty interesting just because, like, I don't know, his powers are so weird. Like,
yes, they are.
It's just like, mostly it starts off with, like, this kid, and he's, like, starting school, and he's getting bullying. He's been in trouble before, and there's, like, a gang terrorizing the town, sort of. And he goes to this Scooby-Doo-style mansion, and I think they even call it, like, the Scooby-Doo mansion.
Yeah.
And he finds this suit, and
he
somehow gets these powers, but they're, like, really weird powers. Like,
he can grow mud or shoot mud.
Yeah, people get like muddy. People shoot him, and it just, like, goes through him. And he's not like through the whole comic. He's like, am I dreaming? What is happening?
Yeah, there are definitely a few weird things in this. Like, yeah. he gets hit by his principal's car or whatever, and then the principal's like, you got mud all over my car, and it's weird stuff like that. I don't know. I thought his best friend character was actually pretty well written. The scene with the bully, I thought was pretty funny.
That was good.
Like, basically this bully's picking on him, and his friend's like, people are gonna think you're a bully because this guy's a wimp. And then he's like, oh, I don't want to be a bully. I want to be a good guy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was kind of fun. I don't know. It's a fun book. The art's great.
Chris does, like, more creative stuff with layout and just, like, weird panels and dropping backgrounds and then adding, like, text and dialogue in weird spots than anyone, than most people in comics these days. So.
Overall, though, I would say the first issue was very spare.
Yes.
There wasn't a lot there.
Yeah.
I feel like it's going to get better, and it's... You know, it's kind of moving into the story more towards the end of the issue. But
curious to see where it goes.
Yeah, definitely.
It's
very bizarre. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to keep reading it. It was a fun little comic.
Well, yeah, if you guys are looking for some different stuff, there's 4 books of the Jack Steph stuff out, and the first one's like $20 for like 300 or 400 pages or something.
And you're a big fan of Kane, his other series as well, right?
Kane is a detective comic that is one of my favorites of all time. So,
yeah, if you like Paul Grist, it's definitely worth checking out. Or if you're just looking for a weird little superhero book that's not really like anything coming out right now. It's definitely also worth checking out for that. All right, so that's Mudman number 1. Moving on to our last book of the week.
Yep.
This is a good one.
It is.
This is awesome. The Who is Jake Ellis Volume 1 soft cover.
Dun, dun, dun.
Who is Jake Ellis? Well, I should say that this is written by Nathan Edmondson with art by Tonki Zonyek.
Who is amazing.
Yeah,
the art is very good.
It's so good.
And the story's cool. I don't know if we've actually talked about Who's Jake Ellis on here before.
It was a long time ago.
It definitely started coming out a long time ago. Yeah. It took a long time
Half
to finish.
Half a year, 7 months.
But basically, the main story is this guy. What's the main guy's name? John Moore?
Something like that.
Anyway, but he is kind of on the run.
He's ex-CIA.
Yeah, and he's on the run from the government. And the main thing that's going on is he has this other person in his head, Jake Ellis, who kind of helps him out. He's like, you know, there are guys around this corner, or like, here's like the secret password to get into this place and stuff. And the whole time you're wondering, who is Jake Ellis?
Who is this Jake Ellis?
And
actually, the answers are very intriguing.
Yeah, yes. No, definitely. And that, but that's kind of the crux of the story as well. So we can't really tell you who Jake Ellis is. You're going to have to read this to find out. But overall, it's a fun action series. The
action sequences are amazing.
Yeah, they're really well done. It's always very thrilling.
Like, yeah, I was about to say, it's kind of like the Brian K. Vaughan thriller stuff where you just kind of keep turning pages just to see what happens. It's like, I read all these issues when they came out, and I reread the trade again, and just like, it's so excited to read it. It's just so fun and so fast-paced.
And it's incredibly satisfying when you start getting answers. You're like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, these
that's
are
really cool.
Good ideas. And
it's totally different from this, but in ways it kind of reminds me of The Sword.
Yeah.
In that, like, there's always something happening, and it's always adding to, like, you know, the layers of intrigue in the story. And one of my favorite things about this is the relationship between the main character and Jake Ellis.
Yeah, they're so good.
There's kind of adversarial, and he's like, why is this guy in my head? And they're always kind
of... Or even, like, why is this crazy imagination of mine disagreeing with me? Or, like, am I going crazy?
But then there's a part where he's, like, not in his head for a little while, and he's getting this, like, separation anxiety, and you can tell that they're kind of becoming one. And you don't really know if Jake Ellis is real or not, or what's going on.
There's a great culmination of all that. Like, the last issue is just great.
Yeah, I will say, this is only the first volume, but you do find out who Jake Ellis is to a certain extent in this.
Yeah, and, I believe.
Enough to, like, keep you, like, Like, it's satisfying enough, but you still, there's still a little bit of mystery. It's like, why
one
is
of
this happening?
Those great movies with ends like, you know, a little twist at the end. We're like, oh, we could do a sequel. You know, yeah. It's because I believe that when this came out, it was so popular at the beginning. It was only supposed to be this first storyline, and they've extended it for maybe two more trades or, you know, 10 more issues worth.
Yeah.
So you probably, maybe that's why it took a while to, like, you know, rewrite the ending to stretch a little bit. But this book is awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. If you like crime stuff or just action adventure stuff, if you like stuff like Homeland Directive that came out recently, which was a great book.
It's incredibly addictive read. It's great.
Yeah,
Queen and Country. I mean, ugh, it's so good.
If you like stuff, then you'll like this.
Yeah,
yeah.
So you like things that are good.
Yeah. So that's it. That's 2 weeks worth of comics.
That was a lot of comics.
Yeah, it was a lot of comics. It's always a lot of comics.
Yeah, it's because we read all the new stuff.
We always talk about a lot of comics. You know what else we like to do though?
What's that?
We like to get viewer mail.
On last week's episode of X-Men, Morph was killed by Sentinels.
Oh, spoiler.
What?
All right, so we got a few viewer mails this week. The first one's short. We should just read this. This is from Jessica.
Hi, Jessica.
I think she's the first time. this is the first time question asker.
God cool.
But she just wants us to know that she doesn't like yogurt of any kind. We exist. There are dozens of us. Dozens. This nah, also had everybody. A video clip that went with it, which was Tobias Fouquet talking about Never Nudes. But
what?
Yeah, we talked a lot about yogurt on the last episode.
Who doesn't like yogurt?
Yeah, who doesn't like yogurt? I'll tell you.
Dozens of people, apparently.
Jessica.
Weird stalker people.
So, Jessica, don't be a jerk. Yeah. And happy birthday. It was her birthday.
Happy birthday for your...
That was
non-yogurt loving.
I got her a bunch of Yoplait. Yoplait, the most delicious yogurt in the world.
Yeah, I agree.
See what you did? You sent this in, and what are we doing? We're just talking about yogurt again.
God, Yoplait, fruit on the bottom.
Big Planet Comics Yogurt Podcast. It's the Yogurt Cast.
I prefer Go-Gurt.
Yeah. But all right, so Go-Gurt is good because it's like yogurt. But
you just squeeze it in your mouth.
You can
skateboard while you're eating it.
You can do a half pipe.
Yep.
You can do like 30 half pipes.
30 half pipes.
Yeah. So thanks for your question.
So 15 whole pipes?
That was quite a statement, actually. There's no question about
it. I skate in a whole pipe. It's 2 half pipes. All right. So moving on to a question. And we love this next question, by the way.
I haven't heard it. Well,
this is from Matthew.
Okay.
He says, I've been to dozens of comic shops, but yours is the best.
I do love this question.
This is starting off pretty good.
Yep.
You always have stock of anything I want. Nothing ever seems to sell out. It's amazing what you've packed into that tiny store.
Way to stroke our egos.
Hey, send us questions whenever you want, buddy.
Yeah.
Other shops never have anything on Thursday, let alone a week later. How do you do it? What makes you the best?
Whoa, this is a tough question. All right.
I mean, do we want to? Do we really? I mean, basically,
inherent awesomeness.
Yeah, we keep really good track of our numbers.
Yeah,
I mean, it's kind of boring, I guess, how we do it. But
no, it's kind of interesting in some ways. I mean,
are people interested in the mechanics of how a comic store works?
I am, because that's all. I
mean,
worry
the main
about.
Gist of it is basically we get to know our customers and we know what they want, and we try to keep that in stock and try to have a good variety of things and be able to. The main thing is that we read a lot of stuff, so we can kind of, you know, gauge like what is good and what is bad, and our customers trust us enough. You know, we say like, no, read this, it's terrible. Like, we're pretty honest, and that's like the main thing that keeps us.
Well, awesome, I think what you said is another thing that's important is that having read so much stuff, we can say, oh, here's a new book by that guy. We read that one thing before, it was really good. We should get extras on it. So, we kind of try to judge ahead to know that some good stuff is coming out and get extras of it.
And conversely, we'll be like, oh, well, you know, this great team was working on this book, but then they're leaving, so people aren't going to really want it at that point. Yeah. And
or Scott Lobdell is now writing this comic. We should stop ordering it.
Exactly.
The main part of our whole business scheme is that we try to be friends with our customers, you know, just try to get to know them and not just try to sell them whatever came out. Like, oh, yeah, you should read this. It's like a new Batman book. It's going to be really good. Yeah. I mean, we're like, no, this is terrible.
True. So that's how we do it. That's what makes us the best.
That's why we're so awesome.
Tell your friends.
And then he has a kind of another question here that is not as telling us that we're awesome. But thank you for telling us that we're the best. Yeah, we definitely appreciate it. So he says also in these big crossovers like Fear Itself, for example, why don't they ever release omnibus versions of them? I always feel like I'm getting half the story when I just read the main title. Wouldn't it be better for me, the consumer, if I could get one book with like all 60 comics in it, even if it was digitally?
They recently released like a Secret Wars omnibus and a Secret Wars 2 omnibus that were like, you know, like $200.
Because
these giant hardcovers that
had. If you want to wait 20 to 30 years, we can satisfy your needs.
Yeah, I think probably the biggest problem with that is that a lot of people don't want to read everything. Like, yeah. people approach these crossovers from different angles. It's like, right. Some people just want to read the main story.
Yeah.
And I can totally understand why you want to get the whole story out of that, because you should be able to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Buy a book and get the story.
But then there's so much
side
filler.
Stuff, yeah.
Cash in.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a lot of the stuff they'll do is great. Like, a lot of the Fear Itself miniseries were really good. And especially the issues of series like Avengers and Uncanny X-Men and stuff. Those were great.
Yeah, Avengers Academy. Yeah.
Yeah. But then when you put them all in a big book, there,
it doesn't make any sense. Because, I mean, a lot of the problem is like all the, like, for example, the Avengers Academy stuff. It's like ties into the Fear Itself, but it's mostly about like what's been happening in the books and how the characters react to this event that's happening. And if you put it all together, I feel like it would be like it would make any sense.
Yeah, like one good way to do it is like look back at like the Batman No Man's Land series or Mutant Massacre, X-Men stuff. Those were huge crossovers, and if you try reading them, they're so uneven. Admittedly, that was a cross huge series where it was like part one in this book, part two in a book by a different person. It just doesn't fit as well. Admittedly, I agree that they should be writing it better to have an entire story in the main plot line, but
yeah,
also the trying to sell you books.
The Fear Itself omnibus would be like,
that's a
like
thing too.
3,000 pages.
Yeah, it would be huge, and it would cost like $200. But yeah, I think like Jared was saying, the writing is at such different levels. Like the main series is going to be really well written, and if you want to kind of especially do things in like chronological order, it would just be a mess.
Yeah,
I think they kind of did something similar to that with they put out a big Civil War hardcover that had kind of the important stuff in it,
right,
along with the Civil War thing, but that even came out like a couple years after.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's good for the Marvel series anyway that they've been doing is you have like Fear Itself, the main series, and you'll have like New Avengers or whatever. There will be one or two other books that are kind of the main sidelines, so just come in and we'll be like, yeah, get Fear Itself and the New Avengers trade.
Yeah, set. That's the thing, we can always kind of, yeah, since we read all this stuff, we can point you in the right direction of what stuff you need to read.
Yeah,
you
don't actually need to read all of it.
We can find reading orders for people and stuff, too. We do that stuff all the time. Because,
like, the Blackest Night one, for example, that was basically between the Blackest Night miniseries, the Green Lantern series, and the Green Lantern Corps series.
And they all took place at the same time.
You had to read issue after issue, but they put them out in three separate books.
And Black Lantern Corps.
Oh, yeah, Black Lantern Corps.
All that stuff. Yeah. It was like, But and then, yeah, you had to read them. It's like you have to read this issue of Green Lantern. And then this,
but yeah,
issue
read of, chapter one of this trade paperback and chapter three of this trade paperback, yeah, then back to chapter two. And yeah.
So it definitely gets messy.
Yeah, they could do some kind of omnibus that has like the main good parts from other issues that are, you know, required for it. But it's hard, you know.
I mean, I think. And people,
it's not worth it for them.
People are also completists, so they wouldn't want just like parts of the issues. Yeah, I don't know.
So you're caught between the simplicity of having a single book and these companies trying to sell lots of comics.
Yeah, I mean, the basic thing it comes down to is that it's not profitable for them. I mean, it would take a lot of work to put these together, and like they'd probably sell like you know, like 500 or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, like we wouldn't carry it because it would be too expensive.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be like, yeah, like $200 or $300, and like who's gonna pay for that, you know?
So really what you should do is write the publisher and say, try and have a main storyline that will stand on its own better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which they've done in the past. Like Civil War was great on its own.
Yeah, that's true.
Fear Itself was a little definitely disjointed.
That was a few series back.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the one that people always point to of like, hey, this one was actually well done. But that was like 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The main problem with Fear Itself was the juicy bits of the story that people wanted were like all these people who got these hammers that were fighting. And that all happened in side stories.
Yeah. Right. That was weird.
Yeah. So anyway, I think I don't know if we answered that question, but we definitely talked about it
for a long time.
We got the gist.
Yeah. So moving on to a question, and thanks, Matthew, for the question.
And the compliments.
Yeah, and definitely the compliments. We like that.
Send us swooned.
If you have any compliments, send them to podcasts@comics.com. All right. So moving on to a question from Christian. He sent us some questions before. He says, obviously, you guys have every new book that comes out each week at your disposal to read, so you probably don't have to spend too much money on comics every week. We don't have to.
But
besides the occasional graphic novel or special collection that comes out, what are the titles you actually spend your own money on each week or month to own yourself?
I'll start that off because it's easy. None.
Yeah, Jared buys nothing.
I went from buying lots of comics to working in a comic book store and buying more comics and then slowing down, and now I buy... Unless it's something that's like a standalone or is something that will be hard to get or is not going to be reprinted in a certain fashion, like if Paul Pope does a short story in a book, or if there's like a creator or a standalone issue, I will buy that if I know I can't find it another way. But other than that, I don't.
Yeah, the only
now you do buy some things in trades though.
Oh, but that was his question. He said, "Well, besides trades."
He says besides the occasional original graphic novel or special collection.
That's true. Okay,
but you get a Usagi Yojimbo.
See, I get Usagi Yojimbo, Fables, Scalped, Northlanders. It tends to be like a series that I love. I'll get in the collection. So those are some of them.
Yeah, I kind of do the same thing, but like I usually like I wait for like some kind of crazy like special edition.
But you get some things monthly. You get Walking Dead.
Walking Dead is probably one of the only things I get like monthly. Still.
I get Walking Dead in hardcover. Yeah.
But then most of the stuff I'm like, I usually wait. I'm like, oh, man, there'll be a cool hardcover of this. Like recently I was talking to somebody in the store, like I bought all the Punisher Max hardcovers because I love that series. And there's a current Punisher Max series, which the Jason Aaron one, which is really good. And I'm kind of like, do I want to buy the trades? I really like it. I'm hoping they do some hardcovers, and I like just kind of wait. And you know, mostly I go through previews and buy like the weird, like crazy expensive things that we won't have in the store. You know, it's like I bought like recently like a Mad Max fold-in collection, which
Mad Max
that would be the greatest fold-in ever.
Mad Magazine's fold-in collection, which I was like, are we gonna have this? And I was like, even if we do, like it's kind of incredible. Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's stuff like that. And if I like because I get to read everything, so if I like something a lot, then I'll get it. Like I bought like the Frankencastle hardcover. Like I'll buy stuff like that. If I really like it, I'll definitely buy it. But like in issue form, not too often. Pretty much just Walking Dead right now. Right?
I mean, well, we've seen this trend a lot among our customers of people like, oh, I really like these few issues, and they stop getting it. It's like, I'd like to buy the trade when it comes out. And I think for us, it's accelerated even faster because we'll just read a few and not have to buy it. And then I'll be like, I want all these Northlander trades. I'm going to put on my list right now. Yeah.
And there's a few series like that where like I just read it in trades, so I get the trades and read it.
Yeah, I don't buy much in issues. I mostly buy trades of like really weird things. Like I like weird manga.
Yeah.
But I do buy Doctor Who in issues for my wife.
Yep.
And I buy Paper Cutter in issues, which is a indie comics anthology that comes out that I love.
That's really good.
I think that might be about it for issues for me, though.
What are you saying, like regular series too? I mean, you don't get much in trades. It's an ongoing series. You get a lot of the interesting one shots.
Yeah, like I'm kind of obsessed with like old comic strip collections. Yep. So I like buy all the Popeye hardcovers. I buy like all the Captain Easy hardcovers. I'm gonna buy all the Pogo books when they come out. God, I buy all the Peanuts books. I just, you know,
yeah,
I buy weird crap. Yeah, but issues, not so much. I get Doctor Who. I get Doctor Who magazine. I get Doctor Who Insider.
I see a trend.
Yeah. And then I don't get any Torchwood stuff because I'm a Ginnet. I don't like Torchwood. But anyway, so yeah, that's it for that question, I guess.
Yeah.
I hope that's probably really disappointing to people. They're like, why do I buy comics?
Yeah.
You should get a job. Well, I mean, if I didn't work at the store, yeah, I would probably buy a lot more comics.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I'm gonna add that onto his question. If you guys didn't work at the store, just a couple titles, what would you be buying right now?
God, I'd be buying Uncanny X-Force.
Yeah, I would definitely be buying Uncanny X-Force.
X-Men.
Walking Dead, Invincible, Usagi Yojimbo.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff I love to read that I would have to buy. I'd be buying if I didn't work.
Severed, Batman, Animal Man,
Scalped. I'd have to get Scalped.
I'd be buying all kinds.
I'd be spending a lot of money.
Yeah, I was before I started working at the comic store. I was probably spending between $30 and $60 a week.
I was spending like $70
a week. $70 a week. Yeah.
I would come in and pick up like $20 of comics and be like, "This is it. I'm going to buy a trade." So
So but having access to that stuff is nice.
Yes.
Yep.
Not to rub it in or anything. All right. So just one last sort of question, comment thing. Mark Miller, who wrote Superior and Nemesis. Sorry. Every time he writes it, I just say that stupid crap. He says, Big Planet Comics podcasters, I've heard your pleas and I'm here to help. Oh, well, that's good. I wonder.
We do need help.
Last week you asked about the name of the symbol and then the symbol's on here. But basically, we were saying, like, what is the at thing called?
Oh, yeah.
And we don't have Google because we live in China. And he says it's called the at sign, which is boring.
That's what I said.
He says it's boring. He says it's also called an ampersat or an ape tail. Although I will say I saw that information and that was off Urban Dictionary, buddy. So I don't think that really counts.
Ampersat sounds weird.
Ampersat does sound weird. But I guess the idea is that if it's an and... is the ampersand?
Yeah.
Then the
what's the other one? Monkey tail?
Ape tail.
Ape tail. Oh, that one.
Different thing. Wait, apes don't have tails though.
Monkey paw.
But apes, the thing is, the distinction between apes and monkeys is that monkeys have tails and apes don't.
I thought the difference between an ape and a monkey was that apes are grape.
They also rule the world.
And monkeys are funky or chunky.
Chunky.
Anyway, so, but he says that the symbol originally comes from accountancy, where it meant at the rate of, as in 9 comics at $3 equals $27.
Nice.
So there's a little math for you guys. Yeah. He says obviously it has more modern uses, such as an email and on Twitter.
Mostly email.
That's true. Well, the thing that was interesting about it is when they adapted it for using an email, that there was some coding language where the use of that symbol meant delete or ignore every bit of code that comes after the symbol. So when people started using it like in emails, they're like, what? You want me to delete this part of the thing? So
that's what Y2K was.
Very simple.
Yeah. So that's all our user question. our viewer mail. Why don't I always say viewer mail?
Because it's
podcast is such a mess. Yeah. But that's it for this week. If you guys have questions, you can always send them to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com.
Yeah.
So how do you think we did this, guys, this week, you guys?
I'm tired, but I felt this was a good one.
We were gone for a week, you know. Yeah. Did we get
came
rusty?
Came back stronger than ever.
Yeah, we did. We came back stronger than ever. I'm going to send a tersely worded letter to John Travolta's lawyers and see if we can get the Welcome Back, Kotter theme song for next
yes.
week.
Good idea.
Welcome back.
Whoa, buddy. Oh,
hey.
Whoa.
John Travolta just burst through the window.
Yeah, have you seen Face Off? Don't mess with that, dude.
That was not approved by Big
Planet. He will tear your face off.
He will tear your face off.
And replace it with Nicolas Cage.
So if Nick isn't here next week, well, you can get your face torn off. You'll still be able to
podcast. Yeah, right? Yeah, I can talk.
We'll be in the hospital with that room.
There's no viewers.
So. Through rain or sleet or snow or getting our faces ripped off, we will be here for you every single week. What, except for the ones that we take off.
Yep.
Cool. Well, I guess we'll see you guys next time.
See you then. Wonderful weekend.